The special planning committee meeting, it's 4:31, so we are good to go. The first thing before we go to public comment is I would like to take a moment to thank the Settlement Community Task Force members for their dedication over the past year. You know, we set to them no small task of putting together a plan and recommendations for the council of how we can best support these communities and help preserve them. So I'm just going to read the names of the task force members. So thank you so much to Pearl Askew, John Carson, George Freeman, Cheryl German, Jacqueline Gore, Patricia Graham, Charlotte Jenkins, Lily Johnson, Cassandra Johnson Davis, Edward Lee, Theodisha Lyles, Laura Pirano, Kathy Smalls, Rudine Washington, and Kim Williams. So thank you so much, and just thank you so much for your dedication to this task. So the first item on the agenda is public comment. So if you are here and you have a comment that you would like to make relating to the Settlement Community Task Force report and recommendations, please come to the podium. You have 2 minutes to speak. Just state your name and address for the record. So is there anyone else? Anyone who would like to speak?
Hello.
Hello. I'm going to set my timer.
Hello, my name is Kerry Roller. I'm 2009 Ashburn Way, Mount Pleasant, president of Park West Master Association. So, clock's running, right?
Yeah, it is.
All right. First, we've read through the report and compliments to the team that put that together. But our concern here is Park West shares the concerns of the broader Mount Pleasant community about preserving the local Freedmen's communities, but cannot abide by their recommendation to build a road through the heart of our community. The road to compromise has been proposed, as it's been named by the Charleston County Council, is very disruptive to our community. It goes right through the heart of our community, and we've proposed alternative proposals to the Charleston County Council, and we're hoping we can get the town of Mount Pleasant support get serious consideration of those alternatives. In fact, we have a meeting tomorrow night at about 5:30 with Mr. Sass and other people in the council to see if we can make sure that they're giving serious consideration to this proposal. So we appreciate your leadership and interest on this issue. We look forward to working with you all. We hope that this proposal finds great satisfaction for our community, and we hope that you'll give Park West some attention on this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here to speak?
Oh, you don't want to hear that.
Michael German, 1707 Snowden Road. I live in the Snowden community in the unincorporated area. I just want to say again, thank you. Thanks to the task force for their recommendation. And I'm not surprised of some of the recommendations on there. As a matter of fact, it's been the same conversation for the last 50 years in terms of sewer. I just hope that this time their recommendations don't end up being another discussion and we take action to correct something that should have been done many, many, many years ago. We are your neighbors. I read a report where it says, I'm speaking for the Snowden community and all the other communities, we've always been neighbors to Mount Pleasant. Mount Pleasant is the one that's growing to where you're next to me now, but we've always been there. Don't treat us as if we're someone different that needs special attention. We just want the same thing that you want, to live here in peace and harmony. And I think we can achieve that if you take the recommendations by the task force that you elected. I think we can move forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else for public comment?
Hello, Lily Johnson, 1593 Hamlin Road. This past weekend, I had the opportunity to speak on a panel at the International Gullah Geechee Conference in Conway. And so with approval from Liz before doing so, I was able to show those who were in attendance the recommendations and inform them of the task force. And many of the entities were very surprised that we even have a task force to bring light to the issue. So we have a lot of agencies who will be looking at what we do going forward because they are quite interested in the task force and the recommendations, suggestions.
Wonderful. And if there is particular entities that would like a copy of the report, please do let Liz know so that we can send it to them, because we've already sent, I believe, up to the State House a copy of the report.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you. Is there anyone else for public comment?
Yes, thank you, Lily.
All right. One final call for public comment. Any comments? Okay. All right. We are going to close public comment and move on to item number 3 on the agenda, which is the Settlement Community Task Force report and recommendations. So, Liz, I'll let you take it from here, and then we'll open it up to committee discussion. Okay.
Thank you. So, you know some of this, you know all of this, I guess, this intro bit. Can you hear me? Okay. Task force was appointed by town council back in 2020, and with the goal, as we've talked about, to discuss issues affecting the various settlement communities, most of which are adjacent to, but some of which are within, and parts of which are within the town boundaries. We had 15 task members who did meet monthly, and I appreciate your recognition, Ms. Whitley, because they did a yeoman's job. They were here. They did not hold back. And we had some really good discussions. So I appreciate the opportunity to work with them over the past year on this report. So with this report, they identified a number of issues of concern. We started off, that was our first meeting, was just throw it out there. You know, what are your issues of concern, and let's figure out how we're going to talk about them over the course of the year. And as we did that over the course of the year, these are the kind of the general topics and the way things, we tried to organize things to make sure we covered everything. And with each meeting, we brought in experts and representatives of appropriate agencies or entities who dealt with the particular issues. For instance, Center for Ayers Property folks came and talked about the Ayers property and the legal issues of owning land and what happens if you don't have a will and how do you fix that and what can we do about that and what might be some things we look at, for instance. We had one meeting that was we brought in people from the town stormwater, the county stormwater, the DOT, and I'm missing somebody, electric companies, to come together to talk about specific issues within the communities where there were drainage problems and figure out, make a list and see what we could start, you know, working on there and come up with a process for what happens, you know, how do we address this going forward. So there were some really good meetings with different entities like that. So we talked a lot about infrastructure, the economic disparity between not only necessarily the folks that live in the communities versus some of the newer subdivisions in town, but also the way investment has been made over the years within both types of areas. We talked about cultural integrity, what the communities mean to the people that live there, and what they can show us and teach us about the history of Mount Pleasant. We talked about that. And then, of course, we also talked about property ownership because, you know, if you don't own the land, then you have no control over it. So those were kind of the big themes, if you will, of the group's conversations. And I'm sorry. So just to kind of dive right in, I didn't know how else to talk about this except just to kind of go through what the various recommendations were. We kind of breezed through them just in the, you know, here they are, you know, read them in your own leisure before, but this is an opportunity to for us to have a conversation about them. So here we are. So infrastructure. I spoke a moment ago about getting people together and coming up with a plan forward for dealing with places where there's stormwater issues that may. Part of the challenge with those is that sometimes the ditch will be part in the town, part in the county, part on private land and part in the DOT right-of-way. And so who's going to maintain it, and how do you coordinate that maintenance? So if you clean out the top part of the ditch, but the bottom part of the ditch is clogged, you're not getting anywhere. So that's where this Intergovernmental Flood Prevention Task Force comes in. And that's a mouthful. But it was established by Senator Sandy Sen, and it is for anybody in Charleston County. And so they have kind of come up with a process for bringing the different entities together on projects like this and creating a working relationship between them. So that's an option for citizens of the town as well as of the settlement communities.
And for us as a council, what would our role or what impact can we have working with this task force committee? Is there something that we need to communicate with them, or is this something that can be done on a staff level? Is there a resource to submit complaints to the committee, and
yes, ma'am.
And how do we communicate? And I guess that folds into number two of improving communication channels, is how do we disseminate information about this to individuals in the settlement communities who may have drainage issues at their properties?
Right. That's a very good question. And I know that a number of the members of our committee took the information back and have worked, you know, with members of the community to try to identify particular problems. I know of one that's been submitted. I'm not sure whether have been others that may just not have gone through me. I mean, there is an application. I can certainly share that information. And that might be an opportunity that staff as a, you know, as an outreach, maybe on social media or something, hey, you know, did you know that this exists? And if you've got these issues, here's the link to submit your problem. Something like that could certainly be done.
And the other thought that I had was, is there a possibility somewhere on the town website to create, because we currently have a resources page for senior citizens.
Right.
That kind of lists all the local, state, you know, county resources for senior citizens. Transportation issues, housing issues, it's all there. Is there a way we could create something similar for the settlement communities that kind of take, because a lot of the items, when I was reading through this, there are some of them that are just, it's informational.
Sure.
And is there a way that we can create something like that is like an easy access?
I think we absolutely could.
Okay.
And we've actually kind of talked about that in a different setting with just neighborhoods. You know, there's a lot of information sometimes that just folks in the town don't know, and how can we improve that communication? So that could certainly be part of that that bigger picture, that everybody needs to know that information. Mm-hmm. You know.
Okay.
So thank you. Yes. Okay. So then we, from drainage to sewer, as Mr. German mentioned a moment ago, you know, that was something we talked about a lot. I mean, I'll be honest with you. We talked a lot about the lack of provision of sewer within the settlement communities. Well, at the time it was Clay Duffy, it was before he retired, came and spoke with the task force about, you know, the rules and regulations and how they're established and how they connect with the town and all that sort of good stuff. But and their desire to find grants to fund some of this, you know, infrastructure expansion in appropriate areas. And but then the kind of, you get into the questions of, okay, well, how, you know, what are the requirements for that? As we've had conversations before with the town has the requirement at present for, if you're contiguous, you've got to annex to have sewer. And so that was kind of a point of discussion that doesn't always, you know, that, you know, obviously there was some, you know, concerns over that, having that rule in place. When you aren't in the town and you want sewer, you know, that may not sit well with you. So we talked about trying to find stimulus funds, grants. I mean, regardless of the political angle of whether you're in the town or the county, in order to extend sewer, it's going to cost a lot. And so, you know, you've got to come up with funding somehow. And so that was an angle, you know, that we talked about a fair amount with trying to find you know, opportunities for grant funding. And that's something that the Waterworks can pursue. Obviously, the town or the county could also pursue those as well, or together. And to that point, number four, part of the many of the grants that are available out there for various different infrastructure projects are tied to, you know, perhaps low-income areas, or, you know, that their criteria is such that, you know, you have to meet their criteria to qualify, and it's got to be a low-income area. Well, the town's demographics as a whole don't reflect that. And the way the census data has been, and we're still obviously waiting on the new census data, but to find data for an area as small as some of the settlement communities to be able to justify, look, this area really does need this kind of grant because it really is a lower income area compared to those other ones over there, we can't find that data. So not based on traditional sources. And so maybe we need to consider finding, you know, doing our own surveys or doing some sort of our own polling or something to come up with data that would support those potential grant applications. So that's what number four is about, is that if you just look at town data, we don't qualify. So, and then, you know, number five is a big one in terms of council policy, that the task force recommended changes to the rule requiring annexation for sewer service. And that's up to y'all. but that was, you know, I don't think a meeting went by that wasn't discussed at some time or another. Just, you know, said that you know that really was important to them. Continuing the infrastructure, Mount Pleasant Waterworks, Clean Water Coalition, it's a project that I presume they're still doing. I haven't heard anything about it recently, trying to work with the communities and the grants and identifying priorities. That was something that Clay had said that they were working on, and to be honest, I don't know. I don't know whether, I haven't talked to them recently about it, but I presume they're still following that path. Same sort of thing. Water and sewer infrastructure grants. There was some conversation about the idea of alternative waste management systems might be okay in some areas. That was not extremely popular with the committee because it's, you know, they're on alternative waste management systems with sewer, and sometimes they can be expensive, but they can also be, according to Ms. Fugo, who brought some of that information to the group, they can also be very cost effective. And from a resilience, sustainability, green sort of perspective, maybe that would be more cost effective and more better solve the issues of, you know, sea level. If the sea level is coming up and it's messing up the septic systems, then maybe a different type of system could be considered. That's just, you know, kind of out there. Sliding scale for tap-in fees, that would be obviously a Mount Pleasant Waterworks fee. But again, they don't slide the scale based on income or any sort of considerations like that. So that was part of their, you know, maybe there could be some sort of discount for people who met certain either age criteria or wage criteria, that sort of thing. And the concern too about public water, because I think there's some who still use wells. So it's not tied to annexation in the same way that sewer is, but still there are people who don't necessarily have public water. So that was.
Why don't we pause at this juncture so that we can have some discussion on this section? Because I feel like, you know, as we go through each section, we should pause and have some discussion. So on the sewer issues, items 3 through 10, does the committee have any comments that they want to make on that, or any thoughts about that, Ms. Hyatt? Mr. Chapman?
I know being on the Water Supply Committee, we've had conversations with Waterworks about establishing a septic tank maintenance program. They weren't sure how many people would be interested in that. They talk about how a well-maintained septic tank is fine for the environment, but if you get issues with it, then that's when it becomes an environmental problem. And so that was just, when we talked to them, that was one of the solutions that they suggested, which I was surprised they were willing to do, is have a septic tank maintenance program where you could sign up for that and be a part of them helping you to maintain your septic tank, that might be sort of a bridge in the time being. It may even be cost effective. But that was one thing that came up that I wasn't sure if everybody was aware of. And when we talked about keeping lines of communication open, I mean, I'm not really sure now that the task force has completed its job, how we can stay in touch and still communicate these things. Because, you know, every community, you know, they're different sections all over town, and how we could all stay in touch with any opportunities like that that people might be interested in. But we did have that discussion, and we were interested in knowing how much interest there would be, because you'd have to have enough people to sign on to do it for it to be, you know, cost effective for everybody.
Mr. Chapman?
Well, first of all, thank you all for all the time you've spent putting this together. The issue of serving one community outside the town versus another, I think, speaks to the fact that maybe at this point it's time to start looking at our ordinance about sewer as well as water serving outside of our community. Having said that, I don't have the answer on the best way in which to do that. And I don't know that we can go all the way one way or the other. But I think it's maybe time that we can start trying to think about how we do that, and maybe doing small areas at one time to see how it works out. And I'm certainly willing to work with council to look at different alternatives, and also work with Waterworks, since I'm on the Water Supply Committee of Council, as well as to work with our legal staff on maybe coming up with some kind of a compromise. And I don't know what it is, but I'm certainly willing to take a look at it. You know, we do have a lot to offer in the town. I'm not saying it's not the best way to go about it. And we've had a number of people outside of the town limits that have decided it is better to come in and join us. And I would certainly encourage everybody who wants to. That's part of helping to create an overall plan on the best way to do this. I don't know what that is, but having the settlement community task force and your recommendations is going to get us to start thinking about different ways we might approach the subject.
Ms. Corley?
Yes. I just wanted to thank everybody as well. I know that I recommended a couple of people for the task force who have done an excellent job, so proud of you. Thank you. And just to piggyback on Ms. Hyatt's comment about the maintenance program, I was there when you guys were discussing that, and it seems super affordable as well. So I think that's something we need to take a look at as well. Liz, how big of a role did the county play in this, and will they get a chance to see this presentation?
Absolutely, if they would like. County staff was here at every single meeting.
Sweet.
And they were copied, county council was copied when we sent it to the state house. We sent a copy to county council as well of the recommendations, just so they've seen it, you know, maybe they haven't taken the time
as a group to digest it or anything of that sort. We have been talking with county staff about how we could, there, as we get further down in here, there's some zoning stuff, you know, that would, you know, could come out of this, and we've been talking about how we could begin implementing that just pretty straightforwardly through our code rewrite, and they've been working on their codes as well, so maybe this would be a time to take what we've learned and to put it to action for that part of the puzzle. So
and then lastly, for this section anyway, I know there's other parts of this that I'm looking forward to diving into a little bit deeper, but I agree with Mr. Chapman, you know, just come on in, the water's warm. Have that discussion. I've only been on council for 2.5 years, so I still have a few things to learn about how we got here, but yeah, again, thank you.
You know, for me, it's very interesting because the state of South Carolina has very odd annexation rules. And because of that, we have over time evolved into where Mount Pleasant has kind of grown and grown, and then we have these donut holes throughout the town. And there are certain settlement communities that have chosen to come into the town. And I believe that there was a presentation to the task force about, you know, the cost benefit analysis of like coming into
that
the
was
town.
One of them. Yes, ma'am.
But I understand also, like for example, with the recent potential annexation of some sections of Phillips, where the council declined to annex in those sections at the request of the Phillips community to preserve the integrity of that community. And I think that the time is ripe. I think there has been a little bit of a sea change about the approach to, rather than the sense being we must annex the settlement communities, to how do we preserve the settlement communities, whether or not annexation is a part of that, leave that up to the communities themselves. But I think, for me, there is a justice issue to access to fresh water and sewer. And that is why this rule of the council has never sat quite right with me, as like to hold the leverage of sewer access over a property owner to require them to annex in has never quite sat right with me, but it has always been the direction of council for a long, long time. And I think that potentially the time is ripe now to raise this discussion at the council level and see if there is that sense. The other thing, and there is a view as well of concern, and that I think is paternalistic, that if sewer is granted to the settlement communities, that will simply encourage big developers to come in and buy out the communities, because they'll say, well, we can get sewer now, we can take your land and build whatever we want on it. But I think it's very paternalistic of the town of Mount Pleasant to say, we're not going to give you sewer access because we're trying to protect you. I don't think that that makes any sense at all to me. And I think that what we need to do is provide the resources and the education to the landowners in the settlement communities to empower them to economically benefit from their land. Like there's that's something that we should be doing as a community. And I think that there are some of these items later on in the task report that kind of go into that a little bit. And so, but that's kind of where I am on this. And I think that there is an opportunity to raise this discussion at full council. Now, there are only four of us on this committee, and it takes a vote of 5 to get anything accomplished on council. So that's something that's going to have to be looked at. But I, along with Ms. Corley, Mr. Chapman, I'm ready to begin that conversation. So, all right. Is any further discussion on
the only Chapman? Thing I would like to add is, if there's ever a time to start looking at different ways to get the sewer extended, there is so much ARPA money out there that both the Senate and the House of Representatives for the state have both voted on to send to the full House and full Senate. And how that's distributed is distributed through the Rural Infrastructure Authority. That Rural Infrastructure Authority And it says rural, but it's for all all sizes of cities and towns. And if there was ever a time to be looking for grants, now is that time. So I just offer that. And I know water and sewer was one of the primary issues, as well as drainage. So I would think that's something, and I hope that's something that we can work with Waterworks on to maybe help with this issue.
Ms. Hyatt, did you have anything to add? No. All right, let's move on to transportation infrastructure.
Okay. All right. So first item on the transportation infrastructure has to do with the whole, talking about 41 expansion and the way that it would connect down into the proposed plans for connecting 41 to 17 and then a crossover into the community was something that was not recommended by the task force. Okay. And I apologize for the random question mark there.
So this isn't the widening of Highway 41. This is actually
it's part of that. Okay. It's part of that. I think there's, you know, multiple parts of that project, but that is part of it. One of the recommendations was that if new roads, and I would imagine perhaps 41 would be a prime example, designed across multiple jurisdictions, that perhaps in the future the planning and permitting process could be handled by the COG instead of by one of the entities. That was just a recommendation that we could look into. Number 13 talks about, and we keep coming back to the theme of communication, and that goes back to what you said earlier about the website, and I think that's a fantastic tool that we need to do better with. But communication with the community members about local infrastructure projects, particularly roads, bike and pedestrian infrastructure, communication earlier in the design process instead of at the time that it's already designed, and could begin impacting the communities was a concern. And that any plans shouldn't be modified without community input support. That was one of their recommendations. And that ties in also with Mount Pleasant Way and Gastonville Road sidewalks, numbers 14 and 15, just the way that they would could or would be designed within the communities. They just had specific recommendations for 6 Mile specifically, because that project, you know, has been talked about of recent times. Let's see, require sidewalks within all new subdivisions, including along the frontage road, the access road. So a lot of the subdivisions have sidewalks inside, but not outside connecting to the rest of the community. That was just a small recommendation. And then just in general, the idea to stop building new roads or widening roads within settlement communities was a recommendation.
So one of the things with the Mount Pleasant Way was that I think that there was a lot of surprise that the settlement community didn't want the Mount Pleasant Way kind of going through, because we've always viewed the Mount Pleasant Way as this amazing interconnected bike path, sidewalk, walking, like something to create a very walkable, you know, path through the town top to bottom, and to, you know, to attack it mile by mile. But to me, that makes it so clear that the communication aspect,
right,
of not communicating with the community of what they're getting, and I, by having this path through the community of bringing, you know, opportunities for pedestrian traffic and for bikes to come through and potential, yeah, green space. So I think definitely, like, as we move forward with the Mount Pleasant Way, having any piece of it that will touch the settlement communities, we should definitely communicate with those communities prior to any sort of move to do it in that area. And if the 6 Mile community does not want, you know, what's the alternative? Is there an alternative to that? But but maybe meeting with leaders of the Six Mile community and having further discussion of what the Mount Pleasant Way really brings to the community as a positive, and then see if they still don't want it, you know. And then for sidewalks, requiring new sidewalks, that would be more of a county issue, right, than if they're not in the town.
In the town or the county.
Right, if they're not in the town.
Right.
So so I don't know that it's anything that we could really have an impact on.
Only to the extent that it's in the town.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Are there any thoughts on the transportation infrastructure?
I feel like this council has, I don't have the data in front of me, but I feel like that I can recall we listen to the communities when they come and speak to us, and when we are maybe looking at things in a different way. And, you know, I think that they do a good job of showing up and telling us, hey, we don't want this, or we don't want it like this. And I feel like we have listened and acted on their behalf as much as we've been able to. So, yep.
Any other thoughts on this section?
Well, on the Mount Pleasant Way issue, and this morning, as part of the bids and purchases, we authorized the work to begin in the Scanlonville area, where we'd work very hard with the community. And, you know, it's hard for me to fathom why a community wouldn't want sidewalks, bike paths for their children and for recreation, for people who live in the community. But it may be that there are some places that if people don't want them, there are a lot more that do, and we don't have nearly enough money to do what we need to do, mm-hmm. to do the Mount Pleasant Way, which was a major, major issue with our whole comprehensive plan. It was the number one item that people said they wanted. So if there are areas of the town where people don't want, there are plenty that do. And the Scanlonville sidewalk, which was developed for about 2,400 feet of sidewalk and bikeway, which we work with the community, is a perfect example where working with a settlement community, that it worked beautifully. And if there are places where people don't think it's the right thing to do, then we need to move on.
Ms. Hyatt?
When we talk about economic opportunity and that kind of thing around town, I know in Greenville, their similar system is Rabbit Trail.
Swamp Rabbit.
Yeah. They took an old railroad line and turned it into this greenway, greenbelt kind of a thing. And it's a similar concept. And the property values in that area went up. People just loved having that access there. So maybe, I mean, we just need to talk more about it, show plans more, and make sure that people don't really want to be a part of it, because it can really be a positive thing with, you know, infrastructure covered by the town that can be green space and park-like and really nice and access for the community. So there, we just might need to have more conversation about that.
And then this, with the roads issue, a lot of that is county and state level, not council level.
True.
But I feel for the settlement communities, because it was like, where are we going to put the road? Right through the middle of settlement community. And, you know, and it was, and then to place that full burden on the settlement communities for road expansions and developments, I think it's something that must be borne by the entire community. We are a growing community. And if there's ways to, I don't know if there's a way to build a bridge over it so that the people make, you know, they can stay connected and have a safe way to cross, you know, some kind of like support for the community, and finding alternatives to what is there. But really for the council, that's not really our jurisdiction. We have no authority when it comes to developing the roadways. We do have control over the comprehensive plan. So I don't know if the transportation committee could take a look at what that south into 7 Mile, which I'm not even sure what that is exactly. Howard, I don't know if you have more familiarity with that particular road project.
Well, I do, and the area in 7 Mile, the county spent a lot of time and effort to improve what they originally had and to develop it within the existing right-of-way, not take property from individuals within the 7 Mile community. And the plan made sure it kept access available to the church in the 7 Mile community. And I think the plan did a lot to recognize what was requested in. Did they do everything? No, they didn't do everything. But they spent a lot of time and effort to make a substantial improvement to what was originally planned for the 7 Mile community, which is basically in the intersection of 41 and 17. They modified it 4 or 5 times, and I think they came out with a much better plan.
Moving, if there's anything further on the transportation infrastructure, let's move on to the economic disparity.
To clarify what seems to be an error here.
Oh, sure.
We're not talking about...
Oh. Please go to them.
George Freeman, 1450 Bowman Road. We're not talking about what just transpired with the county and the town of Mount Pleasant and SCDOD. We're talking about a road that's in the comprehensive plan that starts at the intersection of Highway 17 and 41 and transverse through the 7 Mile community and connects with Billy Swales Boulevard. That's what we're talking about. This is something that someone, the Comprehensive Plan Committee, put in there against the objection of the community when they were doing the comprehensive plan. This has nothing to do with what has been transpiring with Highway 41, 17 in the past 3 or 4 years. This is a completely different road that comes from the intersection of Highway 17 and 41, goes through the 7 Mile community and connects with Billy Swales Boulevard.
All right,
I hope
thank
that
you.
Clarifies it.
Thank you for the clarification. I appreciate that. All right, do we have anything further on transportation infrastructure? If not, we'll move on to economic disparity.
Okay. All right, housing costs. We never talk about that. Looking at, obviously, we've had conversations many times about workforce housing, the cost of living in the town. Y'all have talked about that on a number of occasions in a number of different settings. So some of the recommendations that the task force made had to do with looking at some of the zoning, and are there things we could do to tweak, and this is what I alluded to about working with the county to try to see what we could, if there were some changes we could fix to allow some, we talked about greater flexibility of housing types in appropriate areas, perhaps by special exception, so it has to go through a review process, to allow different, perhaps maybe a duplex, maybe something that would allow somebody to have a renter to help with their housing costs, or provide a space for the elderly relative or the kid coming home from school or that sort of thing. There might be some changes needed within the underlying zoning to make that happen. We talked with Housing for All Mount Pleasant. Ms. Fugo came to many of the meetings and had a lot to say about different ways of working with homeowners and developers about trying to encourage and support different affordable, if you will, housing types within the community that meet the needs of the members of the settlement communities, who, when a subdivision, if a property, there have been situations where a property in the community sells, new houses get built, and they're way priced, out of the range of the folks who live right all around it. And so there's the price, and of course the style, and the big fence around the new community that don't jive with the rest of the feel of the community. I guess that's getting a little ahead of myself, but can we work with Housing for All and other entities to see what we can do to create the opportunities within the settlement communities for housing for the folks that live there and their families and, you know, and other people who need and want to live there. That kind of goes along. Well, number 20 speaks to the housing maintenance angle. If you have a lot of the residents within the communities perhaps are older, their homes are older, who haven't had the opportunity to fix them up. As you know, we had a conversation about when a house in many of our, you know, if you will, normal subdivisions in the town, you know, houses move on the market a lot faster than they do within a settlement community. A settlement community, that's your family home, and it's been in your family, many of them. I mean, I know there are exceptions. But, you know, if you're not fixing up your house to sell it to the next guy, some of that maintenance doesn't get done. Does that make sense? I mean, if you move into a house that your mother had lived in or whatever, you're going to do what you can, but you may not do everything you would do as if you were putting it on the market to sell it. Just kind of a different perspective on the transfer of ownership, so that some of the maintenance has been deferred on those homes. And would there be an opportunity to work with homeowners, whether not, you know, there are plenty of nonprofits that do that sort of work. So how can we make this, make the connections? How can we make perhaps an opportunity for that to help folks stay in their homes and retain that affordable housing stock that's already there instead of then feeling like they have to sell it so that they can move off and then that house, you know, the area gets redeveloped. So
one of the things, the town of Mount Pleasant actually on an annual basis, at least pre-COVID, is we give money to nonprofits. Like there is an application process where nonprofits can ask for funding in order to, you know, if it provides something that the town doesn't provide. So for example, the Charleston Animal Society, we do not have like a pet shelter in the town. And so we help fund them because when we have pets in the community that are like, you know, wild animals that they get, they go, or dogs, feral dogs, they're going to go to that. So it's possible, and I know there's at least one nonprofit that works, that does maintenance. I can't remember the name of it right now. But if they were to come to the town and ask for some money through this nonprofit budget that we have to give to nonprofits, that is something that we could give to them with the recommendation of the usage of that to provide housing maintenance in the settlement community. So that's something that we could do. Item number 21, this is in the comp plan of requiring new residential developments to have workforce housing units. I'm not sure whether or not that's something we can do under state law.
I think it's a gray area,
yes,
for certain.
But I think
it was a recommendation, mm-hmm, you know, that we consider that.
I think it's something that we want as a community, for sure. I think that historically what's happened has been an exchange where a developer would come in and ask for increased density in exchange for building the workforce housing. And that's something that council was willing to do historically, but with the rules on that, the restrictions on that have been, you know, I mean, a 10-year sunset of, it wasn't truly
right,
affordable,
right,
long-term housing. So I think that if we were to do this in the future, we would need to make sure that that was maintained as workforce housing units, not something that went away after a period of time. What is the off-grid utility options? Is that like solar?
Yes. And back to and I'm not sure why that's really kind of in there twice, but it has effects on both sides. Infrastructure and housing costs, but that instead of having to pay for a sewer line, you could have an off-grid sort of option that works and supposedly is economical. And you know, again, if we're trying to keep housing costs down, it costs money to put in that sewer line. What would be a way to keep from having to make that investment was just the idea on that one.
Does anyone on the committee have any thoughts on this particular item on the agenda or in the discussion? Ms. Hyatt?
On number 18, I guess I've brought this up a few times. I've wondered, you know, the list of things that keep communities from coming into the town. And I know one of them is probably, you know, how things are zoned, and I'd love to know all the reasons, but that was one thing I thought we should discuss, is making some changes in certain zoning districts that would allow flexibility in housing that would be more affordable or more in line with what already exists, as far as we talked about patterns of development and everything. So I think that is something that this committee could probably address. I have wondered about that.
Okay. Yeah. Does anyone else have any thoughts on this before we move on to the
next? Yes, ma'am. On the off-grid utility options, not knowing what that might be, you know, we already have an issue with septic tanks, and so I would be real cautious to start going beyond what we have if we're simply just creating another problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my only thought on number 23.
Okay. Ms. Corley, do you have any thoughts on this one?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right, moving on to the next one.
So investment opportunities, denial of investment opportunities for private property and community spaces. This goes back to questions and issues with finding investors and finding banks willing to loan, for instance, as well as the need for the community to be able to have opportunities to invest for, say, community centers particularly. Number 24 speaks to 7 Mile and Hamlin desiring to create community centers for their communities. Cage is looking for investors and grants for developing economic development opportunities within their community for their residents to have a place, you know, to start a business. And the 26 speaks to Charleston County's involvement with the whole idea of grants and funding opportunities, because these are within the county, many of them, and so it obviously should be a cooperative effort at least. And then the number 27 speaks directly to redlining. That, as much as we'd love to think it's not an issue, it is still an issue for people trying to get loans on their homes within the settlement communities for whatever reason. And there could be, I mean, there might be reasons to that that could tie to heirs property. Sometimes if you don't have a clear title, then there's an issue, but that's not always the case. So is there anything we could do, you know, just, I mean, obviously we don't regulate banking, you know, but, you know, we have influence, the town has influence, and, you know, just that's, I think, bringing attention to the fact that it's still there. We can start working to figure out ways to go against that. And speaking, and again, local banks, there are Community Reinvestment Act grants that, and that the banks have access to, that they can invest in the communities, but are they? So that's what all that is, those questions or those recommendations are about. Do you want to pause there?
Yeah, let's pause there. Does anyone have any thoughts on this? I feel like there are things that individual council members can do within our network with people that we know in the banking industry and reach out to them and kind of do encouragement, but I don't know that there's anything that we as a council can do as far as like a particular action or action item. I mean, there, Ms. Hyatt?
I was just going to say, with our economic development strategy, we reviewed the final information today to pass to full council in our economic development committee. And we defined certain parts of town that we would like to focus on for economic development. In some of these areas, there's some settlement community property. And so there would be opportunity. I saw land lease, and things like that, where we would like for the settlement communities to be part of that when it comes to economic development. I know there's property off Long Point Road, just different areas that we would like to see some development, and we would welcome the settlement communities to be part of that too.
Anyone else have any comments on this? Mr. Chapman?
No, ma'am.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to
Business support. Promoting local African American businesses, whether that's a, you know, through the chamber and coordination, exactly.
To encourage Black-owned businesses to join the Mount Pleasant Chamber of Commerce and participate in the networking activities in there. And I also think, I mean, we can do, we do town initiatives to promote like local businesses, and we did that, Live Local, Lauren, what do you remember the name of it? Shop Local? Shop Local. So we had a whole initiative where you could get a sticker for your business window and people could enter to win, you know, $50 gift certificate or whatever, and you would hashtag when you shopped at that local spot. So I think that just having better coordination and encouraging local Black-owned businesses to get involved in the chamber and participate in those kinds of like programs. Mm-hmm. And it's possible, Black History Month to highlight, you know, the town highlights Black police officers through the course of Black History Month. We could highlight local-owned businesses as well.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. And then the next page. Same theme that you were just talking about, and participate in the not only the chamber, but also the different organizations around that help people with business skills and business plans and that sort of thing to help strengthen the businesses that either are out there that they're thinking about or, you know, trying to help them establish new businesses. And the idea, too, for number 31 would be to have a specific incubator program in the town for Black-owned businesses. That would be another step from, you know, in addition to just working with the groups that are already out there. Back to number 32 is back to the zoning changes that we've been talking about whether they're might be opportunities for allowing appropriately scaled neighborhood businesses within the communities to provide some of those opportunities that haven't necessarily been there. And 33 as well, specific, just more general. Local business community to provide opportunities for local workers. So the concern was local businesses don't necessarily hire local people. Now, how do you do that, you know, but that's a conversation perhaps to be had. Maybe there is a better way to do that, maybe through the chamber, maybe through some of the entrepreneurship programs. There could be some opportunities for making some connections there that would provide those opportunities.
Every business in Mount Pleasant is hiring right now, though, right? They're all looking for people to, they're dying for workers. So then
one of the things that came up, we talked with, when we had the Center for Heirs property, part of their mission involves also, specifically forestry in terms of a way to help people reap benefits, economic benefits, make a living off their land by growing trees if you've got enough of it and you can, you know, you go through, they have a program that you can go through to help you manage that. And then we got to talking also about the whole, many of these areas used to be farmed, and there's still a number of farms in some of the settlement communities, and people, you know, like to have opportunities, just need to have opportunities to sell their wares. And so the town actually did an assessment back in 2011, which is a lifetime ago, but it had some interesting points about making connections with local restaurants. We have such a great culinary community in this town. Is there some way we can connect the small farms with the market of the local, local restaurants?
Absolutely, and the farmers and the local Mount Pleasant Farmers Market is another opportunity for local farmers to come and sell their wares, for sure.
Yes, and so number 36 speaks to just creating an East Cooper farm to table program. We've got the shrimpers. You could incorporate that, the fishermen, the table, you know, the farms. You know, maybe there's something that we could do, you know, I don't mean to separate necessarily from, you know, the greater Charleston area, but maybe there's something we could do that's an East Cooper flavor that speaks more to what we have with our historical communities in the area. Just a thought, a recommendation.
Let me just speak to that. Secretary of Agriculture has a program where they give specific recognition to restaurants that use local or state farms for their tables. And so that's something maybe we take a look at to make sure mm-hmm. everybody's aware of.
Sure.
The Secretary of Agriculture is strongly encouraging local businesses, in particularly the food industry, to use local farmers for their table.
And I serve on the board of Explore Charleston, which is the tourism bureau for the region, and I've talked with them about agrotourism and the opportunities for a map of all the local farms and where those local farms are being, their produce is being used or their animals are being used in local restaurants, and putting together like a map of that. So it would be great to include farms, local farms in Mount Pleasant as well, as because I think the focus has been on like John's Island, where there's more farms there. The sweetgrass basket, is that this? I have to admit my ignorance. It grows in the marshy areas. Is that correct?
Yes. Or so, along the high edge of the marsh. Yes.
And so that is where there's been a lot of development, and so there's been less access to that.
There is less access. I think when an area has been developed, then you know they manicure the lawns, and you don't have the wild native plants growing necessarily. So part of its access, part of its the availability of land to be able to go. So I guess it all goes together. It's the land, but it's also the permission to go on the land and harvest the sweetgrass. There are programs. I mean, I know James B. Edwards. They have a greenhouse horticulture program, and they're working with Boone Hall right now to figure out best places where they could plant sweetgrass and see, you know, kind of doing a test plot this year to see which one works best, and maybe that, you know, they're working on a partnership. I know that. But that's...
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I will say that when we bought that property on Faison Road, it found out it was 90% wetlands soon when the rules change. I mentioned to the mayor, I wondered how sweetgrass friendly that property might be because it's kind of a wetland, and I just thought we might even look into that and planting some on that. It's what, 33 acres? That there might be some portion of that that could be devoted if we could figure out if it was the right
situation
and right. environment for growing it. I did ask him if he thought that was something we could look into for some piece of it, because even if it's developed, the whole thing won't be, you know, some of it will be kept wet probably.
And with the stands along Highway 17,
yes.
how does that work? Do people rent those from the town?
No, they're owned by the basket weavers who put them up. It's kind of an interesting
gray area.
Very, very, gray area. You know, the town has always, I mean, they've obviously predated any of our modern rules and regulations. So they tend to pass down through families. Some of them, there have been challenges over the years because some of them were in the right of way, and then, you know, when 17 was widened, the town moved a number of them and rebuilt them in a different location because the road was being widened. And obviously some have been dislocated or by development. Many times when that happens, the town has required the developer to reconstruct them on their site. There have been challenges with that because, you know, trying to fit them into the site and access and
often the property owner wants insurance on the liability insurance, and that's not something that's typically budgeted for when you've got to stand on the highway. So, you know, there's kind of some growing pains with that, but they're not town property. The town does not manage a program with them in general.
Are they being used? Like, do we know how many of them?
We had an intern last summer do a study that he just kind of marked them on a map, and, you know, we gathered what information we could about them. Many of them are being used, maybe not every day, every week.
The Culture, Arts, and Pride Commission is in the middle of a process of refurbishing the Sweetgrass
Right.
Stand, so they're getting volunteers and local community volunteers, donations from Lowe's and Home Depot, and they're repainting and rebuilding and clearing out the brush and the trash, and they've already done, I think, four stands near town center, I think, or four stands near
Boone Hall.
And then they're working on
Across
four
from
stands.
Boone Hall. Right. Something like that.
I was going to volunteer at the last one, but then it was going to be like freezing rain, so they canceled it and are moving it to March. But I saw you had your hand raised. Was there? Can you please go to the podium? Thank you.
Hi, this is Cassandra Davis, and I am one of the board members on the task Sweetgrass. The Town of Mount Pleasant Settlement Community Task Force member. The Sweetgrass Basket Stands, I just want to, one, speak to it, and not in any disrespect, but there's no gray area in reference to the Sweetgrass Basket Stands. The Sweetgrass Basket Stand is a part of the Gullah Geechee people's heritage. It's been around way before I've been alive. And so the basket stands were owned by people who sowed the sweetgrass baskets, and they would walk to Highway 17 and try to sell it as a means of paying the light bill, food, just to take care of their family daily needs. And although most visitors that come here, they're excited and fascinated by our transatlantic, the history from the transatlantic perspective and us being rice harvesters and planters and using the baskets to help with our daily work on the slave, on the plantations. Really, today, it is still being used as a means of income. But what has happened, which is absolutely amazing that the stands have been rebuilt and that they are available, but for unfortunate reasons, a lot of the sweetgrass basket makers do not have the adequate access for those that are coming across or down Highway 17 in order to get to them. So you find a lot of our seniors that actually sew baskets, they're going without some of their basic necessities. They're making hard decisions because they do not have a way to stop these cars that are going so fast to get to their stand. And then some of the other amazing efforts that was made for the Sweetgrass area down at the Memorial Park, down at the bottom of the bridge, obviously it's not going to fit all of the Sweetgrass basket makers. And so, yes, although there is no dirt ownership, the town of Mount Pleasant has partnered with us, and it goes back to my grandmother to be able to have these stands on the side of the road. We would love to see maybe the driveways widen, adequate parking behind it for the various stands when we're getting off and on 17. So I wanted to make note of that for the actual record. And I know I'm kind of fumbling, but sometimes I get a little nervous. Do you have any other questions?
No, thank you very much. That's a great clarification. And I don't know how, like, if the road, if it's DOT right-of-ways, that some of it's in and some of it's townland, so that's something we'd have to look at, of like where the stands are located and what could actually be done.
Right.
With the potential with the volunteer groups that are working with the Culture Arts and Pride Commission.
Right.
Okay. Is that
access to local waterways, back to the idea of supporting yourself through, you know, through different efforts. A lot of folks used to fish and crab and shrimp and so forth and so on, but their access to that has also been diminished. So that was why where number 39 came from. Okay. Cultural preservation, cultural integrity, we kind of started that. Thank you very much, Cassandra, wherever you are. By, you know, clearly, you know, she knows a lot more she's talking about than I do. But the idea of protecting, you know, we've talked all evening about the need to protect the integrity and the culture and the history of these communities and and their traditions. One of the ideas was to pursue with the federal government the idea of designating the Gullah Geechee people similarly to indigenous peoples, or, you know, that so that they would have better clarified rights and distinctions. And I'm no expert on how that process would be, but I know that there have been folks in the community who have talked about that before, like Alan, and others in the community have floated the idea, but I don't know that it's has ever.
But that expands far beyond the boundaries of Mount Pleasant through the entire. It
absolutely does. Yeah, that's a lot bigger than just.
Yeah, and then just Mount Pleasant, but still, we were coming up with ideas. Societies,
right?
Like that could band together and submit letters and those kinds of things.
Right.
I think the one that really most impacts, or that we have the most opportunity, is with the special area plan for the cultural core, item number 46 on that, which kind of encompasses everything with cultural preservation. I think that's something that we could, that we are, it's part of the comprehensive plan and something that we will tackle at some point in time, and we could maybe prioritize that as well with the special area plan.
Yes, ma'am. And number 41, just jump back to that just to point out, there was some work, historical research done started within the communities a number of years ago that was never finished. So perhaps, you know, finding an opportunity to finish some of that work and compile it and make it available would be a first step along these directions to make sure that we're documenting what we have and figuring out how to protect it. And we've talked about a number of these other, you know, number 44 is what you mentioned a moment ago about the cultural arts and pride, protecting local sources of sweet grass where we've got them, public support for local traditional communities, and the ties to education and historical recognition and cultural efforts, just making sure we're making those connections, and back to educating the public and spreading the word about the opportunities and the challenges that are out there, and maybe seeing what connections we can make that way. There's more on cultural integrity. Let me see. Cultural core and community benefits agreements.
What are those? What are community benefits
agreements? All right. I'm going to call on you again because you understand this better than I do. That came up a number of times, and it was not a term that I was familiar with.
Thank you. It's Cassandra Davis again. The community benefits agreements are actually a legal binding document. You see them more in your northern and western and the non-coastal areas where there's a benefit between the town and the developer or between a developer and a community that they're going into, where specific things must be given back to the community in order for them to give them the right of way to say, hey, yes, you can bring this new entire community into the town of Mount Pleasant, but the same way how they pay impact fees, but these impact fees wouldn't just go to pay for the infrastructure-like type things. It would go towards, let's put a new park in, let's put a new this or that in as a right-of-way. Well, the same thing is for local communities. For example, the Hamlin community. If a developer decides that they want to come in, we're in Charleston County, so we would require the developer to commit to a legal binding document in order for you to get our support to bring this community within our community. Then we're asking you to do this. And so some communities have asked for community centers throughout the area here. They've asked for community centers and received them. And then some of the community benefits agreements, because they were not documented from a legal perspective, they were not upheld. And so we want to ensure that we have the support of not only the town of Mount Pleasant, but Charleston County, that would stand with us and say, yes, you need to commit to this legal binding document, because you're coming in and you're taking things, you're digging up the roads, you're not giving anything. You know, I remember having a developer tell me, I am giving to the community, I'm paying for the land. I was like, these people haven't lived here, ever. And so you may want an entire developmental center, you know, or grants for the kids to go to after school care, grants for kaleidoscope, field trips to different areas where they can learn more about their culture. So those are some items that you would find within this community benefits agreement. But it wouldn't be just like, oh, so the kids can go to Disney World. It would be an lasting impact that could carry on. So kaleidoscope for 2 years, elementary school age, of descendants of slaves that live on this property now. Their family members vote in this community, so they can apply for it. The money needs to be there and accrue interest.
Thank you. Thank you for that that explanation. To me, it seems that a community benefit agreement is something that is negotiated between a developer and the community itself. I don't know where the town, especially for properties that are not in the town, where the town could have an impact on, you know, I think that's correct. But I think the point was that there have been any number of times when promises have been made and not kept. Mm-hmm. And this would be an opportunity to ensure that if you make a promise, you keep your promise.
Gotcha. Yeah, Ms. Askew, go ahead, please.
Oh, there she goes.
It's Pearl Askew, 977 Gaston Road, Allendale. I'm not going to keep you too long, but to enhance what Cassandra just said, we had the opportunity to work with developers in our community, the 10 Mile community. They were very generous, more than generous, not only to 10 Mile community, but to the Whitehall Terrace community and to Charleston County at large. They were real people doing good things for the community. And I believe that the town has given this particular developer an award for such a good things. The Marino family, And when we have another development in 10 Mile, because of developments, all is going to headed north into what is now called North Mount Pleasant. One developer promised us, after we sat and had a conversation with him, we have a beautiful community center that needs to be maintained. We've done our part as trying to help and volunteer as much as we could. That said, they promised X amount of dollars, and they gave only a portion of it. But when we came back to the town, to says, look, they've given us a portion to our 1099, to our nonprofit, so they can get their tax break, and now we are requesting the remainder. They're not acknowledging it. And we were told that since it was not coordinated with the town or Charleston, well, with the town for this particular one, that, you know, there's nothing that could be done. The first gift or donation, we coordinated it with Charleston County. And it was given in increments through the Charleston County Development Community Service Department, given in increments over a period of time, well documented, and Charleston County worked very well with the community to ensure that the funds was there, and when it was time for our project, we went through all the necessary steps to get it done. Now, that said, when what Ms. Johnson is saying, developers are coming into established communities. It's different from coming into 100, 200, 500-acre land that's just being built. But when developers come into established communities, they should offer some kind of respect to the community persons who's already living there for over 150 years. But not to get off task on what I'm talking about, it can be done if Mount Pleasant is willing to participate. Charleston County has participated with the Carolina Park Group and coordinated funds for the 10 Mile community and the Whitehall Terrace community and Charleston County at large, but they were willing participants. The other participants was willing too. What we didn't know that we should have come to the town at that time prior to the Beehive project being built and had a discussion with them. And it was written, they wrote the letter. They signed it, but we could not enforce it because, as she said, it was not legally binding. But I believe that is something that we can work with the developers with, especially for established communities. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's move on to the next item. The next one is community coordination. And I think that this is item number 57, I think, is a great idea, having an open house at Town Hall for the larger community, settlement communities, in order to, oh, wait, did I skip?
I skipped zoning decisions.
Sorry.
But we've kind of talked about that a little bit. You know, comprehensive plan, sticking to the comp plan, which y'all have been doing a great job with. Reiterate, there was concern over, in the way it's kind of played out in the past, that things within the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District came into the town and didn't
opted
request, they opted out that whole fiasco that, you know, as it was considered. So we've changed some of the language, just kind of a quick fix on that, but that's something that'll be as we continue to work on this.
Item number 52,
provision.
I believe that we, I swear, that we did adopt a historic preservation ordinance that matches that of Charleston County. I thought that we had done that. Maybe we didn't.
No, ma'am, not
we've
yet.
Talked about it, but we talked about it, but we've never,
right,
never fully. But that is something that I want to happen for sure. And it's such an easy thing to do, and to allow the communities that are in the town already to adopt this, to get designation as historic, and then for communities that are not in the town that maybe want to come into the town, designated historic just from that moment of entering the town is that. Yeah, I think that there's definitely things that we can do with the zoning. And we have, as Ms. Hyatt noted, when people come in under Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District, we are keeping them in that,
right,
Sweetgrass Basket. We are not allowing them out of that.
So we've made those changes. And then there are some changes here that we talked about for making the Sweetgrass Basket overlay to meet some of the concerns, make sure that it's crystal clear, you know, about the 12,500 square feet. Mm-hmm. We spoke a minute ago about limited appropriate commercial uses to allow, you know, business opportunities and so forth. And looking at the alternate residential uses. And so we've, as I said, we had kind of started having some just on the side conversations about that. So that's something that staffs are continuing to work on with the with our code rewrite.
Yeah, and that's absolutely some things that we can put onto the agenda for planning.
And so that all kind of goes with that. Community coordination, to your point. Open house. The conversations we had was, we brought a lot of good speakers in. Let's make an opportunity to have
for the greater
them
community.
Available to the general public.
Absolutely. And I think the communications network with community leaders and local churches, you know, I think that's really important to disseminate information. And so if prior to having an open house, if there were an opportunity to come to a church event or something I'd be willing to come and sort of speak to what's going to, you know, that there's going to be an open house or just pass on that information so that we get a good turnout for that open house. I think that number 61 is a little bit of an issue for people that are not in the town of Mount Pleasant, because when we created this task force, there were members of council that were wondering why we would even allow anyone not in the town on the task force. And I kind of had to come back, like push back on that and say the whole point of this task force is to represent all the settlement communities, whether they're in the town or not. So I think that to get settlement community representatives on other boards and commissions, first they would have to apply, but I think that given things, I don't think that anyone who's not in the town itself would be allowed onto like the planning commission or board of zoning appeals. I think you would have to be a resident of the town of Mount Pleasant in order to get onto those, just given that it was pulling teeth a little bit to get the settlement community task force to include people not in the town. Okay. Does anyone have anything else on community coordination?
No, ma'am.
No? All right. Lastly, is property ownership.
Yep. Yes, that's it.
And a lot of the things in this are more state-level things, and this is where I think, you know, sending it on to the state level, which is what we already have done, and if there's more opportunities to send it to more representatives and senators. I know Joe Bustos has been working towards getting some funding for sewer connections and that kind of thing, and to give him this report and say, hey, you have the backing of the task force to do those kinds of things. And the same thing with Center for Ayers Property. I think doing that open house, bringing the Center for Ayers Property in to give people an opportunity to protect their land and clear title, and that's also something that is a state level issue of changing rules to allow someone to maybe clear title in an easier way rather than having to go through the entire family tree and get all 134 people to agree to something. And I don't know. Does anyone on the committee have any thoughts on this particular issue, Mr. Chapman?
Well, on the issue of Ayers Property, I think, rather than just sending a copy of the report to the legislature, I would suggest that maybe we do some kind of a resolution to go to our delegation and the whole Charleston County legislative delegation. Mm-hmm. And with that, you know, we speak to the fact that we brought in people from throughout the East Cooper community onto a settlement community task force. And this is one of the major issues that they brought to us that is important. And because of that, we as town council strongly encourage the delegation to pursue the necessary revision to state law to make it much easier for Ayers Property to be combined by the property owners and not make it such a difficult process mm-hmm. to do. And, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know what they need to change the slate law to do this, but there's got to be a way. I know John Dodds did something in the northern part of Mount Pleasant to help with that property to get it developed. So the point is, rather than just sending off the plan, I think we need to send a message to the entire Charleston County Legislative Delegation on why it's important to us as council members within Mount Pleasant to do your best to make that make those law changes.
I agree, Mr. Chapman. And item number 65, there was where it says support work of the Ayers Property Study Committee, we could do a resolution in support of that and encourage the solution to this challenge. And so I think that this has been a really good deep dive into the report and recommendations. I want to thank you again to the members of the task force for putting in so much time and effort to make these recommendations. I think we've got some really great action items coming out of this for the future for planning committee. And I think, is there anything further coming before this committee?
No, ma'am. No.
All right, then we stand adjourned. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you, Liz.